In October of 2010, many members of my extended family, including me, traveled to Phoenix, Arizona for my cousin Jesse's wedding. 2010 had been a record-breaking hot, dry summer and fall. And as far as we Northerners were concerned, early October still felt like a summer heat wave like we had never or rarely experienced. I loved it. I think I had some sense of nostalgia for the suffocating heat of Chad, but most of my relatives did not enjoy it so much. On the wedding day, I wandered through the desert botanical gardens with my camera while my family members huddled in the one air-conditioned building until moments before the ceremony began. One does need to live differently in the desert heat than in our northern lands. The previous day, some of my relatives had gone golfing, and one of them didn't realize that he was not drinking enough water. I'm sure he drank when he felt thirsty, but what he didn't know was that in that kind of hot, dry climate, your body can get thirsty before your head knows it. You have to drink so much more water than you do in Ontario just for your body to function healthily. You can become dangerously dehydrated just by living the way you've always lived. So this relative didn't drink enough water and consequently found himself in the hospital in great pain with kidney stones and missing the wedding. Our bodies desperately thirst for water. But as in that story, we aren't always aware of what we're missing until our body's need is pointed out to us in an extreme way, or until someone holds a carrot in front of us. The hamster? No. Okay. One day, Jesus sat by a well in the middle of the heat of the day and talked to a whole lot of people who didn't realize what they were missing, what they needed. There was the Samaritan woman, of course. There were also his disciples and the rest of the residents of Sychar. Everyone in this story is thirsty, including Jesus. Not everyone knows how to access that which will quench their thirst. But without knowing it, they are all praying, "Restore us, O God, we thirst." So Jesus is sitting alone at Jacob's well when this woman walks up. He says, "Would you draw water and give me a drink?" This is the first thing that really struck me this week. The first thing that Jesus says to this woman is, "I need help. Will you help me?" I find Jesus' vulnerability here to be a striking reflection of our interconnectedness with God and God's desire for our nearness and our participation in God's mission in the world. Especially because this woman probably didn't expect anyone, let alone a Jewish man, to ask for her help. Much has been written and said about who the Samaritan woman was and why she comes to the well in the worst of the day's heat. Her relationship history is dragged through the muck for all to see. We might raise an eyebrow at her 5 and a half husbands, and you might have heard it said that she must have been a promiscuous woman. But some scholars point out that it is more likely that she is someone who has been abandoned by 5 husbands, either widowed or divorced. According to Old Testament law, when a married man died without children, it was the duty of his next nearest relative to marry his widow. It is possible that the husbands of this woman were forced on her successively upon the death of each one. The man with whom she is currently living could possibly have been a near relative taking advantage of her and refusing to legalize the relationship. The law also came to be interpreted that a man could simply divorce his wife if she hadn't borne any children, leaving her very vulnerable in that culture. Consider that kind of injustice next time you read about Jesus speaking against divorce. So, is she barren, infertile? Do her husbands keep dying? Neither of these are things that her neighbors would want to rub off on them. And people who don't fit into the norm of how life goes make other people uncomfortable. I experienced this just yesterday again. I'm of an age where people no longer ask me if I'm married. They assume I am or have been, because that's what people do. And so out of the blue, they'll ask me if I have children. And when I answered no to someone yesterday, our conversation just dropped off. He didn't know how to talk to me about anything else. So this Samaritan woman who didn't fit in was probably given a wide berth, no pun intended. Just enough space so they thought she couldn't hear the gossip. But if you've ever been a victim of bullying, you know that you always hear the gossip. So maybe it was just easier for her to go to the well when no one else would giggle or smirk or walk away with a pointed look. If she's a woman who has struggled throughout her life with infertility, she could also just be emotionally exhausted by hanging out with women who only talk about their many children. For some reason, this woman of Samaria chooses to come to the well alone, rather than face the ways she doesn't fit into her community. She's been told that she has nothing to offer that her community wants to receive. But then this stranger, with no bucket of his own, says, "Would you give me a drink?" This woman was doing what she had to do to survive in a community that either overtly or subtly isolated her. But she was thirsting for belonging. She just didn't know how to get there. She didn't know what to make of Jesus at first. He wasn't acting the way she expected him to act. And maybe she had formed a protective shield for herself. But he starts the conversation with being vulnerable, in need of her. And that's a good model for any of us, looking to those who are on the margins and not saying, "Hey, you need us, come join," but instead saying, "We're missing the gifts that you have to give us." Then the woman gets into quite the theological conversation with Jesus. She challenges and questions Jesus even more than the Pharisee Nicodemus did in the story we got a glimpse of last Sunday. She's getting a hint that Jesus is offering what she didn't even know she was thirsting for, what she desperately needs. When Jesus offers her living water, that language means something specific in the desert, and it's not an old well like where they're standing. Living water is what you would call a stream that is moving, or the source of that stream that is pouring richly, abundantly, giving life to far-off places where that life is longed for. Living water moves and comes to the places that are thirsting, even the driest and most improbable places. And when she hears this, the Samaritan woman recognizes that this is what she's thirsty for. "Give me some of this water so I'll never be thirsty and never again have to make the trip to this well." This well reminds her of her loneliness, her isolation, the barrenness in her life. She wants living water that moves within her and brings life out of what was stagnant and lifeless. Then Jesus says, "Bring your husband to me." I wonder what she thought at that moment. Did she figure the jig was up? She thought maybe some offer of new life was on the horizon, but obviously this guy wasn't going to keep talking to her once he knew her life story, just like everybody else she knew treated her. But she says, "I do not have a husband." And he answers, "Yeah, I know. I know your story. I know how you've been treated. I know how you've been tossed around and that you're under the thumb but not the care of the man you're with now." Jesus knew who she was, and the offer of living water was not just for anyone, but it was also specifically and precisely for her. And in this promise, this woman of Samaria also knows, without a doubt, something about who Jesus is. She sees that he is a prophet. So she says, "Great, I've got a contemporary theological argument for you. Our ancestors worshipped on this mountain, but your people say that Jerusalem is the only place for all to worship. Which is it?" This may seem like a logistical, liturgical detail if we don't know the history behind this question. I see in her question the thirst for belonging and relationship with God expressed on behalf of her whole people, not only herself. The region of Samaria was victim to deportation and then resettlement by outsiders under the Assyrian Empire. The transplanted residents of Samaria intermarried with other foreigners and with Israelites who had escaped captivity and who were still in the land. When the other Israelites returned from Babylonian captivity, these Israelite step-cousins, if you will, who were now the Samaritans, wanted to take part in the rebuilding of the temple at Jerusalem. But they were despised because of their intermarriages, and their offer was soundly rejected. So the Samaritans eventually built their own temple on Mount Gerizim, where they would worship God. And side by side, they lived as neighboring communities, made family by blended bloodlines, but made enemies by past violence, stubbornness, and bitterness. So generations later, this woman is speaking out of the multi-generational pain of division and exclusion, and she wants to know, does God truly come to us on Mount Gerizim? Or have we been rejected, not only by Israel, but also by God? Restore us, O God, we thirst. We thirst for relationship with you. And Jesus answers, you don't even fully know what you need to quench your thirst. Jesus says, neither mountain is the only place to worship. Believe this, a new day is coming. In fact, it's already here, when the importance will be placed not on the time and place of worship, but on the truthful hearts of worshipers. Regardless of whether you are in Jerusalem or on this mountain, if you do not seek the Father, then you do not worship. This woman's question resonates with this week's lectionary story from Exodus 2. It's a story when the Israelites were wandering in the wilderness after escaping slavery and became frantic and angry about their lack of water. Why did you bring us out of Egypt to kill us and our children and livestock with thirst? They complained to Moses. And the even more poignant question, is the Lord among us or not? Speaking of thirst. Jesus says to the woman at the well, yes, the Lord is among you on Mount Gerizim, where you worship as your ancestors did. And the Lord is among those in Jerusalem, if the truthful hearts of worshipers are seeking God in spirit and truth. The Lord is with you right here by this old well that reminds you of the ways you have been hurt. The anointed is speaking to you. I am the one you have been looking for. And with those words, well, actually, she's still not totally confident that she can believe him. Or at least, she's not confident in getting her neighbors to believe her. But even though she doesn't have all the answers, doesn't have it all sorted out, she can feel that she has received what she has been missing. Her thirst for belonging and identity is being quenched. I thought of this woman yesterday when I talked with someone waiting for surgery. She described the last drink of water she had been allowed 13 hours earlier. It was the best, the sweetest water I've ever tasted, she said. And parched as she was, not knowing how long, much longer, she knew the truth of this. So this Samaritan woman runs back to her community with words on her lips that Jesus spoke at the beginning of this gospel. Come and see. Can he be the anointed one? Her new identity is one of witness and gospel teller, not outcast and loner. She finds her place in her community and leads them all out to the well in the middle of the day, where the Samaritans of Sychar invite Jesus to stay with them for 2 days. Which is interesting because he already went the long way around to go through Samaria on his way to Galilee. But he stays. The Lord is among them. Which even Jesus' disciples need help understanding. They're afraid to ask, but they're thinking, why is Jesus talking to this woman? And why does he let this crowd of Samaritans bother him when he needs to eat? So Jesus gives them another farming metaphor. You've heard it said, maybe from your tradition, maybe from leaders you trust, or from your own comfort level, nothing is changing. There's still time before the harvest. But I'm telling you, Jesus says, if you look closer, you'll see that the harvest is ready. You want to just make it through Samaria, but this is the field that's ready for harvest. You just don't recognize the crop that's ripe for believing because it looks different than the fields you grew up around. The disciples need to see what they're missing, who God's kingdom is missing. Restore us, O God, we thirst. We don't always know just how thirsty we are. We can't always quite name what that longing is within us for something more than just surviving the way we always have. This woman of Samaria, whose name we don't know anymore, has experienced the words of Romans 5. Suffering produces endurance, and endurance produces character, and character produces hope, and hope does not disappoint us because God's love has been poured into our hearts through the Holy Spirit that has been given to us. Some here may be feeling parched or stagnant, or like you keep going back to the same well and it just isn't enough anymore. Has your spirit become dehydrated without you paying attention? Or because of the situation that others have put you in? I know there isn't a day that I don't need to hear that God's love has poured into our hearts. Poured, gushing, overflowing, extravagantly spilling on the ground so that anyone can find life in it. Restore us, O God, we thirst. Restore us with your love and your living water. I'm going to read you a story, and then we're going to sing our theme song together. You are all we have. The refrain is for all of us to sing together, and then Rachel and I will also sing some verses that I hope will speak to you of God's love pouring into your hearts and quenching your thirst with living water. This story was recorded by my friend Sally Longley in Australia when she was leading a spiritual retreat focused on the story of Jesus and the Samaritan woman at the well. Jenna, one of the women on that retreat, had recently arrived in Australia, having left a hometown and country that had been ravaged by war. She was still raw with the pain of loss and trauma, but had come wanting to connect with God and, as she put it, draw sustenance from God at this time. She spoke at the end of the day of how she had pictured Jesus coming to the well where she was, but somehow Jesus kept stopping far off and not coming right to the well. Jenna didn't feel she could run towards Jesus. She was exhausted and tired and had no energy left to care for herself or to do anything for her own survival that required being assertive. She just desperately needed Jesus to come to her, to show he cared, and it just wasn't happening. The pain for her was excruciating as she felt, Jesus, you are no different from those aid workers who dodged our city and wouldn't come near because of their own desire for safety. You are just the same. You don't care. I am left to look after myself time and time again. Her pain was visceral. After she had gathered herself, she described how in sheer desperation and resignation, she had gone down to the labyrinth to walk. What else could I do, she said. There was someone else walking the labyrinth too, and she wished she could have been there on her own so she could let myself loose and cry, she said. However, as she walked, she found herself at one point looking at the back of the other person. The person was wearing a t-shirt with writing on it, but the only word she saw was, listen. Was it a reprimand? A command? I don't know, she said. But I knew it was God speaking. I just knew. I stood completely still, closed my eyes, and listened. I was quite close to the tree in the center, and I could almost touch the branches. And then I heard a kookaburra. It was so close it startled me. And I looked up, and it was right above my head, and I could have touched it if I had reached out. I stood so still, and I listened more. It stayed there for ages. And then I walked on and sat in the center of the labyrinth. It was there I suddenly felt Jesus' presence and heard him say to me, "I have brought you to this land of water, and I have filled you with living water, and now you can even give me a drink." So I felt Jesus' presence and care for me for the first time since I have been in Australia. Jesus showed me that word, listen, and he was closer than I could ever have imagined.